Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 16th, 2012, episode 405. Today's episode is brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, horse people.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you being here. Jamie, we had another first here yesterday at the ranch here in Ocala. We had to go to the post office for the first time, and I asked my brother, I said, where do we go to the post office around here? And he said, the post office is at the tack shop. And I thought, you know, what he was. Yeah, well, that's what I thought. So I said, well, I thought what he meant was, you know, the tack shop is right there, and then there's the post office. But that's not what he meant. What he meant is, and this has to be the only place in the world that this happens, you actually go into the tack shop, and in the back corner of the tack shop is the post office.
Seriously? They're in Ocala?
In the tack shop is this little post office. You go in there, you get your stamps, you mail your priority mail, you do everything that you'd normally do in a post office. It's bizarre.
Wow. Okay, so what kind of tack shop is it, though? Is it a, like, because Ocala is heavy racing influence, is it more of a racing tack shop? Is it an English attire? Is it a Western? What kind of tack shop?
It's kind of just an ordinary, regular tack shop. It has, English, Western, and all that kind of stuff. Now, you're right.
Stop there, Glenn. This is not an ordinary tack shop. This tack shop is awesome. They have everything.
Including
a
post office.
The horse husband and the horse wife.
So I should ask Jennifer. Jennifer, what kind of tack shop is it? Is it English, Western? What kind of clothing do they have? Is it more of a racing? What is it?
It is predominantly English, but they have a healthy supply of racing products as well. They have a bit wall that you could die for. It must be 30 feet long.
Awesome. Awesome. And then a post office.
And it's the post office. You walk over to the post office and you weigh your package, and you can page through the wholesale tack catalog while you're there.
So can you pick something up off the wall and then buy it and then mail it to me?
Absolutely.
Okay, perfect.
All in one trip. All in one trip.
I love it. I love it.
I want to know which tack shop got the privilege of having a post office in it. That's got to be a good deal right there.
Well, I think probably it's a good deal for the post office. Haven't you been reading the news?
Sure.
Good point.
I
mean,
true.
My God. Post office is like, please, sir, let us in. Let us into your business.
Jennifer counted. We have 7 or 8 tack shops and feed stores between our house and town.
What are you, living in Norco? Jesus.
They are just everywhere here. Just,
that's not counting the one with the post office.
She really likes the one with the post office.
Well,
so, yeah,
in this tiny little town, in this tiny little town I live in, I really love the fact that, because I live in Waddell, Arizona, and I love the fact that I live on a street that if I make a left, I go to the feed store, which is across the street from the post office, and then you circle back around the block, and there's the farmer's market, the Greer Family Farmer's Market, and they have fresh vegetables every day. So I just, when I leave the farm, and you guys know that I hate leaving my farm, I drive out the driveway and I just make a 1 mile radius and then drive right back into my driveway and I've done all my errands. If only there was a bank somewhere.
We do have that problem. Our bank, we managed to have the same bank when we moved down here. There was a branch down here, so we didn't have to switch banks. But it's all the way in town, so it takes literally an hour and 15 minutes to drive to the bank and back. And it's like, okay, that's got to change. I think we're going to be changing banks just because of that. It does take a long time. But we can get to the post office right at the tax shop. I think those post office trips, I'm going to have to make sure I do them, or they're going to cost me a fortune. She's going to go over there and buy 8 stamps, and it's going to cost me $120.
Postage went up, honey. Postage went up.
Yeah, I can see it now. Jennifer, what's on today's show?
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, the POA takes the stage as we chat with Blaine Arthur in this month's Breed Highlight segment. And thehorse.com provides our Wednesday horse health education fix with a chat about insect hypersensitivity. Looks like welts, scabs, pus, and hives will be prominent in this conversation. And, of course, Glenn's crappy list returns, this week taking on a distinctly Friday feel. So stay tuned for the fracas, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. My daily week. Well, my daily Wendy goes out to Robin Donahue, who is one of our listeners who posted on our Facebook page yesterday. She said, surprise, I bought this mini mare in February, started having suspicions in March, but previous owners swore she hadn't been bred. Started suspecting false pregnancy in April. Swore I felt movement May 9th. Vet confirmed mare was definitely pregnant May 11th. Foal was born on May the 12th. There's a timeline for you, Janie.
How's that for having preparation?
Okay, I think my mare might be pregnant. Plop. Yep, she's pregnant.
And how do you know she's pregnant? Because she just had a baby.
Now, we've bought horses in the past that we suspected, and I think one of them was actually pregnant, but not this close. I mean, so she felt movement May 9th. Finally got the vet out to confirm it May 11th and had the baby May 12th. So there you go. And you know, minis are so fat anyway, it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell, but also, like, you know, she puts the vet bill on the 11th. If she just waited one day, she wouldn't have had to pay the vet bill because she had a baby. Because then you have to call the vet back out again to make sure the baby's okay. Well, that's fucked.
She posted a picture. If anybody wants to see it, just go to our Facebook page and go over there to her recent post by others section, and you'll see the cute little baby there. Cute little mini baby. Little brown ones up with a big, big white star and a little tiny blaze on his nose. He's really cute. But looks like four white socks.
Oh, he's cute. Oh, yeah. Love it.
And you know they're the size. That picture's deceiving because you know they're the size of a milk, you know, a loaf of bread. Although she said this one was big. It was a big baby, apparently. So, all right, your turn. And congratulations, Robin, by the way. Your mare deserves this. That's for your mare.
My daily Winnie goes out to Scout. Scout, who was galloping along, lost his rider, ended up jumping over him because he didn't want to step on him because of the serious bond that horse and rider had. Scout spending months with this said rider. They spent time together. They bonded. They became friends. And when the rider fell off, the horse reacted instinctively to ensure that the rider's fall was not going to be as bad as it could have been by jumping over him while the rider was tumbling to the ground. Said rider, Johnny Depp. Yeah, thank you, Scallop, for saving Johnny Depp's beautiful face and not stepping on it or injuring it in any way. You are a hero among horses, my friend. Yeah, so the story is that apparently Hollywood star Johnny Depp claims the horse saved his life after he fell off while filming The Lone Ranger. Johnny Depp is going to play the Lone Ranger's sidekick, Tonto, in the film that's going to be released about this time next year. I cannot wait for that to come out. But he told the Daily Mirror, he said, quote, I'm lucky to be here. I've done a number of films on horseback, and I've taken a couple spills, but this one was a violent one. I went down badly, and I was dragged for 25 yards. And in the end, the horse just jumped over me and clipped me with his back legs. I had a good relationship with the horse named Scout, and when I look at the tape, I see that Scout saved my life. Love it, Scout!
Wow.
Way to go! Although being jumped 25 yards and then getting clipped by heels really doesn't sound like the horse was trying to save your life. Whatever, though. I'm not picking him apart.
I think Johnny Depp got lucky is what happened there.
I think so, too. I think the horse was trying to shake him.
Yeah, exactly. Get off of there. What are you doing hanging out down there like that?
Seriously, get off
me! So he must have got his foot caught in the stirrup is the only thing I can figure, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, my gosh, being drugged 25 yards, he wasn't hanging on to the tail. So,
well, I don't think he was stupid enough to hang on to the reins, do you? I did that once when water skiing. I forgot to let go, and that's not good either, by the way. You take in about half the lake.
You forgot to let go water skiing?
Yeah, yeah, and I did it with my mouth open, and that's not good at all. That's just not good. I can tell you it's not.
Well, you're not a sporting kind of guy, are you?
I was told by the water ski instructor that every newbie does that at one point or another. You forget to let go because you just knew it. And he said, make sure you keep your mouth shut. And, of course, what did I do? I had my mouth open. I think I took in half the pond that day.
Okay, that's disgusting.
Hey,
I don't understand. Why am I being drugged behind this boat with water going into my mouth? I don't know. Let go and close your mouth. It's not that hard. Anyway,
the other thing about this, did you watch Lone Ranger way back when it was a TV series, right?
Well, I watched the reruns of the Lone Ranger.
Well, Tonto was a fairly serious character. He was not the comic relief. So do you think they're going to play it the other way with Johnny Depp as Tonto?
Well, they have to. Remember they were talking about who was going to play the Lone Ranger, and it was the guy from the Facebook movie. Is going to play the Lone Ranger. Yeah, they've got to take a funny spin on that. To have Johnny Depp as Tonto, I mean, he's probably going to have guy liner on. He's going to have, like, some sort of feathers in his hair. It's going to be awesome. And this is going to have to be a comedy.
Yes, you would think so. I mean, with him in it, you would have to think so. Unless he's got knives and, he's cutting people apart, which is his other kind of movie. But I don't see that happening.
He's got scissor hands?
Yeah.
He's going to have scissor hands.
Well, don't forget, we have our chat room open. You can get there by just going to blogtalkradio.com and clicking on Horses in the Morning. You'll see the chat room at the bottom of the page there, and we also have put a link to it on our Facebook page. And also, if you would like to call us for anything, our phone number is 347-637-3238. Well, we have really bad ads, Jamie, this Friday, and we have a terrific prize, and it's something that Jamie and I use every day, and Jennifer as well. It's called the Flexin Fork from Equity Manufacturing. You've heard us talking about it. It is the ultimate in manure forks. They have two varieties. There is a mini tine, which has a narrow space between them. You can use that for sawdust and pellets and mini flakes and I guess some people use rice hulls, and they also have the wider one, which you can use for shavings and things like that. So you have your choice of either one, and this is a compliment of Equity Manufacturing. We use these all the time. These are the strongest, best manure forks that you're going to find out there. You can. Our horses have stepped on them. I have thrown it to the ground accidentally from a high distance. We have got it caught on roots here when you're trying to clean the paddocks, and it gets caught on roots where normal tines would just bend or break. They just don't. This is a very good. I know you use these too to clean your paddocks, don't you? The flexion fork.
I do, and I would like to say that the flexion fork, like, it is now officially Jose approved, because Jose comes to my house once a week and helps me with the stalls. And there's one particular fork that Jose would always use, and it's the green one, and he liked the green fork, and he liked the handle on the red one. So he took apart the green fork and put the handle from the red one onto the tines of the green one. Like, he's very, very particular about his fork. I mean, the guy's a pro. So Jose actually now only uses the Equity. That's it. Jose approved. I mean, what else can you say?
Well, there you go. And, you know, you're going away for 2 weeks, so he better darn well have a pitchfork that, that you know, he can use for 2 weeks without getting mad at you.
Yeah, I'm sure he's not going to be working that hard at it every day. I've got other stuff for him to do. He's going to be just hanging out watching TV. No, just kidding. He would never do that.
Yeah, and, you know, you've had him for quite a while. You finally found somebody that when you go away has really worked out. You had rough luck there for a while.
You mean, are you referring to the guy that had a party at my house and killed all my chickens? That guy? Oh.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. That one kind of sucked.
Jose hasn't killed any chickens?
Jose has not. If Jose did accidentally kill a chicken, I would come home to a replacement chicken. Okay, that's how much he would be devastated. He'd be devastated. So I mean, the guy is like takes care of the cat, even the guinea pigs. Like, I leave little orange slices cut up for them, and to give him the guinea pigs an orange slice a day. And I come home and all the orange slices are gone. He gave them all to him. I mean, he's that good. So the guy has approved the fork, is my point. And I mean, I don't know what other confirmation I can give you that this is an awesome fork.
And you can get yours by just submitting the best really bad ad for Friday. Send it to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put really bad ads in the subject line. And if yours wins, you're going to receive a flexion fork from equitymanufacturing.com. It's equitymfg.com. Well, also, I guess that's all of the – what's all of the
– I want the list.
We had to go over. Yeah, so that's it for that. I thought there was something else I had to tell everybody. But we went to an auction over the weekend, a horse auction that they have here in Ocala 4 or 5 times a year. And it's mostly quarter horses. Actually, it's a very nice sales pavilion. I didn't even know it existed, but it's a very nice sales pavilion. My brother called me up on Saturday and said, let's go to the horse auction. So we all just piled in the car and went over to the horse auction after we dropped off the kitties. And we got there, and they have this program with the horses that are registered for sale, so it's very organized and everything. It's a little more organized than the horse auctions that we were used to, where we used to live. And so I was reading through some of them as we were doing this, and it reminded me of really bad ads in a way. Some of the descriptions, apparently you get to write your own description for your horse and submit it, and they put it in the program. And of course, there's a lot of great names, because these are all quarter horses, registered quarter horses for the most part, that have some terrific names. So we're looking at these ads, and I'm looking at a couple of them, and you're going to love some of these, Jamie. So let me read you a couple. This is Diamond Doc Wrangler. And of course, they have to tell you every mare and gelding for the last 5 generations that these horses are out of. They have to just give you every detail they possibly can. So, but I won't go through and bore you with all of that. So this one, Diamond Doc Wrangler, this stallion temperament on a range of 1 to 10 is a 3. He is very intelligent, has been ridden for 90 days, and would be a good prospect to work cattle, and as a gelding would be great around children. Now, I know that being a stallion is, you know, it gets better when you cut him, but his temperament as a stallion is a 3. Do you think we're going to get to an 8 or 9 where they're great around children after he's cut? I'm not sure that I would make that statement. Not sure. Oh, did we lose Jamie?
I'm right here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. We lost you for a minute.
On a scale of 1 to 10, Glenn, 3 is good. They don't 8 or 9 means they're a little bit hot. So,
see, I always thought it was the other way around.
No, that's looks, Glenn. On a scale of 1 to 10, you want to be high in looks and low in personality.
Okay, I had that backwards. I thought it was the other way around. See, and the other thing is I don't understand half the quarter horse speak. They have a different language. It's a different world,
yeah,
for sure, because I don't understand half of what they write in here. And we're going to get to more of those, but we actually have a caller on the line here, and I think she probably heard me giving her the Daily Whinny today. This is Robin Donahue, who I gave the Daily Whinny to, who just surprisingly had a baby. Hey, Robin.
Hi.
So were you shocked? I mean, this happened quickly here.
Yes. It was kind of scary and exciting at the same time.
Well, now, did you think you ever wanted a baby, baby Minnie?
You know, everybody wants a baby Minnie, but whether you actually get one or not.
Or need one.
or need one. Yeah, I've always had big horses, so the first thought was, is he going to get out? What do I need to do to make sure he doesn't get out? And I better start wiring really fast.
You bought this horse in February, and you just
mm-hmm.
started having suspicions in March. Now, minis tend to be, a lot of them tend to, you know, be roly-poly anyway. So,
and
was
she
this
was.
One...
She was chunky in her thighs, and my first thought was, well, I've got to get her in better condition. And so I feel so bad now because I decreased how much food she was eating and so she could lose some weight. Because, I mean, she was fat through her thighs and on her butt and everything. And then she was losing weight and looking okay. And then she still had this hay belly. So I started restricting hay belly and trying to figure out how I could do things to help that out. And because apparently minis are supposed to look like miniature horses, not necessarily fat, chunky ponies, or at least that's what I've read. I'm new to the mini world. And then she started losing a lot of weight along her top line. So I'm like, okay, I have to drive her more because that's one of the benefits. That's one of the reasons I got her was because she already was broke to cart. And I was like, great, I never have to sell her because when the girls grow out of her, I'll just drive her. Because I wanted my daughter's smaller horse to learn on because I have a 16-2 thoroughbred and a 16-hand standard bred draft. And they're great, but they just don't know where the feet are. So I was driving her more. And the weekend before, I took my husband, my girls, and me. All went for a little cart ride. And my husband's like, this is too much. We can't do this to her. I'm like, no, she's supposed to be able to pull two adults. She's fine. And she did give us a nice cart ride, but now I found out she was that pregnant. I feel so bad.
You know, you're not alone in this whole surprise, work the horse harder. I have some friends that bought a barrel horse for their daughter, and they're barrel racing the heck out of this thing, and they're like, we are starving it. They brought it to the vet. We're starving this thing, and we're running it so hard, and we're starving it, and she just keeps getting fatter. What do we do? Well, we preg check her is what we do. And then, oh, you're going to have a baby. So they bought the horse, same situation. But have you talked to the breeder? I mean, I don't know where you got it, if it's like a Craigslist
purchase. Yeah, she was a Craigslist purchase, and I bought her from a lady she has a horse training facility, and she is friends with another lady who actually owned the mare. And apparently that lady was going through a divorce, and she was selling all of her horses, and she asked her friend if she would promote and sell her mare. So thinking back, it was really shady because I never actually met the owner. I just did all this through the friend. But I did eventually get in touch with the previous owner through email, let's hope. And I asked her, I said, are you sure this horse has never been bred or has not been bred in the past year? And I find out that the previous owner bought her in May of last year. Apparently, she was supposed to have been bred by the owner before her to have a foal June of last year. She never foaled, so the lady I bought her from had her checked by a vet. The vet said, and apparently by palpation, the vet said, no, there's no foal in there. And
okay, that's a lie. You can't palpate. You can't palpate minis. So
yeah, I was just gonna say, how do they do that? That's kind of awkward.
right. That's what my vet says. He's like, you're not gonna get palpated by me. He's got huge muscle building arms. She swears up and down that she was not exposed to a stallion when she had her. So I suppose it is possible that she was bred right before she got her, maybe if she got her at the end of May, and then she carried it a whole year. I was reading online that apparently minis are supposed to go about the same length of time as the big horses. However, they've gone 300 days, and they have gone as far as 380 days. So it is possible, but I can't get any information about the previous owner, because you know what? Well, she deleted all the email. So,
dude. This is just as shady of a Craigslist purchase as you can get. You realize that, right?
I know.
When we read really bad ads, this would have been one of those ads. Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, bless your heart for taking her. My God, poor little thing's been moved around a million times.
She's 11. She's not going to be sold ever. I've never sold a horse, so she's got a lifetime home here, and she's just the best little horse ever. She's so sweet. But I need help, because I know, Jamie, you've been thinking about all of these cult names for Zenyatta's baby, and you're welcome to share them with this little guy, because I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out a name for him.
Oh, my gosh. Well, email us a full-on shot of the baby, and we'll post it on our Facebook page. And our listeners are fantastic about submitting names. So just send Jennifer a picture. She'll post it online, and then we'll get you a name.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bless your heart. Congratulations. Whatever.
Thank you.
You're a grandma.
Yeah, and he's so cute. He's so cute, but he's tall. He's like over 2 feet tall.
That's not so tall, by the way.
Yeah, usually they're the size of
a
loaf of bread, though.
I kept thinking I'd see a little baby the size, like 18 inches tall, and he's got to be close to 30 inches already.
Wow, poor mom.
And he was born, Saturday morning.
Wow.
But congratulations. Cool. This will be fun for the kids, too. The kids will have a great time with this. This will be good for them that they can deal with a baby that's a little tiny one. So we'll post it. We'll get a name for you. We'll definitely do that. And thank you for calling.
Okay. Oh, sure. No problem. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Robin.
Bye.
Proud mama. Right there.
No kidding.
How cool is that? You know, I always wanted a mini, but I wanted a mini donkey. And Jennifer won't let me have a mini donkey because she's mean. So I can't have a mini donkey.
What do you need with a mini donkey? My God.
Just thought they were cute. I just like them. They did have a donkey at the sale over the weekend, and it was a riding donkey and everything. But great big, huge ears, but it went after we left before the donkey went through. I think Jennifer arranged that so that we wouldn't end up with a donkey in the backyard. Because I could use the donkey for driving. I could drive the donkey and ride the donkey.
Sure,
I'd need to talk
in
the neighborhood. I would.
Sure. Hey, let me save your life and move on to the guest. How about that?
Okay. Yeah, how about
we
do that? Let's play the ad.
Yeah.
Well, we are here with Bo from Back on Track Products, and we're going to highlight today the saddle pad. Tell us about the saddle pad.
The saddle pad is starting to get more and more popular. People some have bought them, buying more. They really like them, and Michelle Gibson is one of them. Some is a top dressage rider, and it's good quality. And what they do, same there, to reflect the body warmth back like a far infrared rear. It's not, they don't overheat the horse or anything. They just keep them more supple and loose. Mm-hmm. And it's a good quality and affordable. They're $79, and it's like a good quality saddle pad.
That's very affordable for a saddle pad that's going to increase the blood flow.
Yeah.
Under. That's amazing. I had no idea.
Are they the type of saddle pad that they can be used both in practice and show?
Yes.
Okay. So absolutely. They're show quality. They
yeah,
look.
Yeah, absolutely. So it looks like a normal saddle pad. You can't see the difference, but it really makes a difference. I don't ride myself, but everybody tells me. And since the increase of saddle pad have been very good, it's actually that products have increased most in our sales. So it means we get a lot of repeat customers. So that mean.
Is it a square pad or is it the shape of the saddle?
It's a square pad. So, you know, we have all-purpose and dressage, and we're going to get one. Goes around
shaped
one. Shaped
yeah.
one too. Yes.
Shaped ones as well. Well, that's great. And $79.95, and they are machine washable.
Yes.
You know, for what it does, that's a terrific price, because we have seen some saddle pads here that don't do anything but be a saddle pad for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is actually $79.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, it's pretty, and it's a good quality to hold up, you know, like a regular saddle pad of good quality. Yes.
Make your horses happy. Go to backontrackproducts.com and get the saddle pad. It'll definitely improve their attitude.
Well, we have our next guest on the line, and I'm really excited to talk a little bit about POAs. And POAs is the pony breed, and we're going to talk to Blaine here in just a second. But being the homeowner, being the farm owner, I have one POA boarded here, and my first ever pony was a POA. So I love the breed, and I'm excited to talk to Blaine Arthur. Blaine, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Now, I see here that you're the Assistant Commissioner to the Oklahoma Department of Agriculture, Food, and Forestry. What do you do?
Here in Oklahoma, I work for Department of Agriculture, which obviously covers everything from equine to our livestock species, and also we have a lot of regulatory functions. So that's my 8-to-5 job, but then obviously a POA exhibitor, owner, my son shows, and all of my spare time. And as many horse owners know, you kind of have to have a regular job sometimes to support your hobby. So that's, fortunately, I get to work in agriculture as part of my real job. So it's a great fit for me.
Yeah, you have to have a job to pay for the horses. I mean, you know, how do you make $1 million on horses? You start with 10. So
that's exactly right.
So you're a POA aficionado. Now, tell us a little bit about the history of the breed.
Okay. The breed is, you know, in, as far as other breeds, is fairly new. Started in about the 1950s in Mason City, Iowa. There was a gentleman named Les Boomhauer who had a Shetland that was bred to an Appaloosa mare, and had a colt that was born with some very unique patterning, coloring, looking much like what folks are familiar with, Appaloosa coloring. And Les decided that he and some friends would get together and put the Pony of the Americas Club together. And this stallion, this colt, was the number one to be registered in the POAs. And the goal that they were looking at was a breed specifically geared towards youth, and that's where our height comes into play as well. But breeding something of extreme quality, but that was a good fit for youth, and then the color component of it also would obviously be a good fit for kids and bring interest to people with the breed. So that's how it all got started. And a lot of people think about ponies and have this idea and visualization of what a pony would be in their mind. But I can assure you, and as if you've got a POA there boarded at your place or have seen some of our POAs of today, they very much look like small horses as opposed to what some people might think about when you say the word pony.
You know, you're right. The POA I had growing up and the POA that's in my backyard right now, they really do. Both of them had this almost quarter horsey look where they had muscle as opposed to just like the low slung fat belly, you know, like the, not to insult pony owners, but did not have that typical pony characteristic. You're right. They look like almost like little mini quarter horses that, with the muscling and the fitness that they have. It is definitely an original looking horse. I mean, you don't confuse a POA when you see one. Where did the name POA come from?
That is really just what they kind of came up with. Mr. Boomhauer and his friends, he was an attorney there, and they just kind of came up with the name, and that is what we have stuck with over these years, is the Pony of the Americas, and as many people call them, POAs. So that's what they thought would be a good fit to call these little horses, and that's kind of what we stuck with.
Now, what I'm curious about as far as fitting horses together, who on earth would think, hey, let's take a Shetland and breed it to an Appy and make a kid's horse?
I agree with you completely. It's probably not what everyone's initial thought would be. And even when you say that, you know, for horse people, they're envisioning something, you know, what the product of that might be something interesting. But, you know, it has actually been, it was a great start to the breed. And they really wanted
to... Are we sure, though, that it wasn't just an accident, that those happened to be the two that were in the field at the time, and this baby popped out, and they went, oh, we got to name this thing?
And, you know, sometimes accidents are the best way that things start. So that's very... That's very possible. I will say for all of us involved in the breed, if it was planned or an accident, we're very glad that they did start the breed, because it is such a tremendous breed for us and for our families to be a part of. So sometimes those crazy things that you hear about in the horse world of a, you know, mare got close to the wrong stallion or something, and that ends up being the ideal offspring for the year. Sometimes those are the best things. So,
yeah, they sure are. I mean, it had to be an accident. You take, but you know what? It's funny that the attitude of the Shetland and the kind of attitude that Appies have, it's almost like they cancel each other out and make a really nice pony. This pony we have in the backyard, Jacob, is just priceless. I mean, he's well broke. He's a very nice mover. He just works as hard as he can. Every once in a while, the kind of like Shetland pony attitude will pop out, but it's very rare. And he's just so smart. And you think, a Shetland and an Appy, you're not going to have a smart, pleasing animal, but he really is. Like, it just brought together the best of both pony, of both breeds.
And I would agree. You know, in talking to people that have been around the POAs like you have, they are a tremendous fit for youth. Number one, because they can go all day long. You know, we have these kids that show in 20, 30 events in a day. So you've got kind of that stamina that you have there. But then kids sometimes can be a little bit challenging to put up with. You know, we have kids from age 2 to 18 that are riding, so it's a great temperament to, you know, the kids can hang all over them and run underneath them and up around and over, and the ponies will go all day long and give all that they have, and then it's really kind of an ideal fit for what they were looking for, that you've got a little bit of that stamina, but maybe a little bit of that spunk sometimes that you need to handle a kid wrangling you all day long.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what happens is you can see Jacob when he's got kids on him and he's like, okay, I'll take it. I'm taking it. I'm just going to take it. I'm taking it. I'm just, okay, wait, no, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm done. Yeah. And he just spins and tosses them off. And of course they only fall like 2 feet, but it's hilarious because he's so tolerant and they really have to piss him off to get him to do that. But it happens. And that's where I think that kids learn to ride. What sports do you think that the POAs excel at the most?
You know, that is one strong point of the breed is the versatility. We have ponies that do everything from trail to Western Pleasure and then participate in the speed events. A lot of our hunter jumper people love the POAs because they're a great fit for kids and they're a great size for that hunter, for the smaller hunter division. But they honestly can do absolutely anything that you ask the horses to do. They can be, we have people that use them just as trail horses or people that use them as working cow horses. I mean, they really, they are the most versatile horse that I have had the opportunity to be around and very willing to do pretty much anything that you ask them to do. We ask them to do a lot at the shows. They may go from a cart class to an English pleasure class, and then we might have a Native American Indian costume class, and the same horse gets, you know, class to class to class and can switch and change over to be an English horse, and then comes back and does a walk trot class with an 8 and under exhibitor. So there's no doubt that anything that you ask that the ponies to do, they are a great fit for pretty much anything across the board.
Now, this may be a stupid question, but are we getting POAs nowadays? Can we still do the cross and get a POA, or does a POA have to breed with a POA to get a POA? Is that a dumb question?
No, that is not a dumb question at all. Okay. We actually are fortunate in that we have been able to bring in some of those really popular genetics from, you know, the quarter horse breed or maybe the Appaloosa breed if you've got a registered POA that you are outcrossing to them. So, for example, right now in the POAs, the impulse genetics are very popular, which are, you know, popular in the quarter horse world as well. We have some great Appaloosa genetics, like the DC Wido genetics that have been brought in. So as long as you've got one of the parents that's a registered POA, you can outcross. And, you know, the idea is we want to keep, you know, those strengths that we feel the POAs have, but always continue to improve upon that. The one caveat is we do have a height requirement in that the horses cannot be any taller than 14 hands when they are mature. So that makes it a little bit difficult depending on what genetics you're looking at bringing into your breeding program, because you have to make sure that the offspring stay within the height requirement of the breed.
And is there a minimum height?
There is. It is 46 to 56 inches, so anywhere in between that range. And I would say probably the majority of POAs that are shown on a regular basis, about the smallest ones are going to be about 50 to 51 inches, and most of those would be shown by our younger exhibitors. Those are very well sought after for our 8 and under division because for those kids, you're a lot closer to the ground. And it's a lot easier for them to do those events with the smaller ponies.
Now, I'm looking at pictures here. I went to Google, and I looked up POA, and I'm seeing horses of every color. And, you know, I've been accused on this show occasionally of overfeeding my horse because I like to feed him treats, and he gets a little chunky. And I'm seeing pictures here. There's a lot of really fat POAs. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, that's the one benefit of the POAs is I would say the majority of them are easy keepers. So if a feed bill is of concern to you, they're very easy to keep fit and keep in
well,
the show shape.
I use that all the time. I just say, well, he's just an easy keeper, and my wife still gets mad at me. I'm just saying. I still get in trouble, Blaine.
But we like that from a feed, you know, when feed goes up, if you've got a PLA or two on the feed bill, they're a little bit easier to keep the cost down than maybe some of your other breeds. So that, and that they, you know, they can go all day long. That's another great thing. We don't have the leg problems that, you know, you might see in some of the other breeds from the riding and the multiple events and the working the horses hard because of the genetic background. Not only are they easy keepers, but they hold up. We have ponies that have been shown for 15, 20 plus years that are still out there with exhibitors going all day long.
Now, that begs the question next is, what are some of the health problems that you do have to watch out for with a POA?
The biggest, probably at one time, because people, if they have switched from a larger breed to the POAs, you know, they may be used to feeding a little bit more than the POAs might necessarily need. So probably at one time, you know, just keeping an eye on them for as far as foundering goes. I wouldn't say that's as with the genetics that we have brought in, we don't have quite as much pony as we did at one point. But, you know, obviously with any breed or any horse, you're going to have to watch for something like that. Other than that, they are about as user-friendly a horse as you could possibly have. We have a lot of families who maybe don't have any horse background at all, and get into the POA world, and they're pretty basic to maintain and take care of, which is a benefit for those people that are new to the horse industry.
Yeah, let me just tell you that I was 9 years old when I got my POA, and it was because we grew up in the city, but we had some land. We had 12 acres, and I remember my parents, they got my POA from a pony party place that were basically,
yeah.
You know, they stand and they get led around in circles in those little,
right.
Little machines that lead them around. And this pony shows up at my house, and bless her heart, her name was Snowflake. The fact that she survived me for that many years is just a true testament to the breed. I mean, I tortured that horse. We would gallop, and I, of course, didn't really have a saddle much time. I didn't have a bridle because I just, first of all, if I could catch her, I just put a piece of baling twine on her halter. And we'd run around, and my horse actually ran smack head first into a tree as I was running her through the woods. So just certain things that, you know, you just, ponies tolerate more than other horses. So
they most definitely do. They most definitely do.
Fantastic, fantastic horses. Now, we have a question from one of our listeners. Have you had any problems with POAs getting moon blindness, something that's very common in the Appaloosa world?
There are a few of them that have moon blindness, and that's when, you know, when you start talking about the color genetics, which is a whole nother, if it's an Appaloosa person, I'm sure they're very familiar with that. I would not say that it is a frequent problem. My family, I've shown since I was 4 years old, and we've raised a lot of POAs. You know, there are some POAs that is a challenge, but I would not say that it was a frequent challenge at all within the breed. Not to say that there aren't some that have that as an issue, but not very many, I would say.
Now, what is your, before we let you go, what is your favorite POA story that you can tell us?
My favorite POA story, it would probably be, there was an old gelding, and as you, if you get to know POA people, you will hear stories of POAs going through generations of families because they just stay in the show ring and the show world for that long. But there was an old gelding who had been shown by multiple families and showed up at a family in Oklahoma. And, you know, people were, now, what's his registered name? And I think I remember him showing. And people getting together, and everyone had a different story about this gelding that was 36 years old that had been shown by these multiple families across multiple states in the U.S. and had won all of these awards, but had just gone kind of family to family to family, ended up with a family in Stillwater, Oklahoma here who had a little girl who was had kind of got scared of horses, and so they got this gelding for her, and he got her back into horses and did every event that they have, but in people finding out that she actually had the gelding, she got all of these letters from people saying, hey, can we come visit? You know, my daughter is, you know, 24 years old now, but she rode this gelding when she was, you know, 9 years old, and we want to come see him. So they really become a true part of our family. Wow. And I think that is the greatest attribute to the breed, is you can ask people, do you remember XYZ horse? And horses stay around for so long and move through, just like a family, you know, pet in some ways, that everybody knows the horse's barn name, and they remember when these, you know, five other kids showed them. But that was a great introduction to that family, because all these people said, I didn't know where he was, and I want to come visit him, and we're so glad that you all. And, I mean, that's kind of a testament to the horses themselves, but then also to the people. It is very, very much a family organization, and that's really where we find our strength, is that everyone wants to be competitive, but we also want to enjoy doing it as a family, which we think is really, really important.
Yeah, they're great teachers. They truly are. So where can people find the POA of their dreams?
Multiple places. I would probably first direct them to our national website, which is www.poac.org. There you can find all the information on POAs. There's obviously classifieds there. We have a national sale that is in October in Des Moines, Iowa. Always lots of talented horses there, everything from younger horses to more experienced show horses, and they're very good quality and very reasonably priced for the talent and the ability of the individual. So
what do they go for?
You know, it can be just like horses in any other venue. Horses from a young horse that might sell for, you know, a yearling that might be $500 to $600, up to some of our extremely talented national caliber horses that will bring anything from $20,000 to $30,000. So there's a wide array in there, but I would definitely suggest to families who want to get in to the breed that you can get a very broke horse, a very kid-safe horse that will be a good horse for your child to start on for a very reasonable price. And that kind of thing, you can kind of ratchet up as you want to be more competitive and move on to those regional and national levels with a different horse. But there's POAs available kind of at any price range across the board.
Well, good deal. Well, it has been awesome talking to you, Blaine Arthur. Again, that's POAC.org. And thank you for taking time out of your day being the Oklahoma commissioner and talking to us. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you all very much. And hopefully we'll see some more folks at our POA shows in the near future.
Absolutely. We're going to post a picture of your sweet, adorable son sitting on that awesome pony on our Facebook page. Or actually, it'll be our show notes page, horsesinthemorning.com. It'll be on there a little bit later. So, everybody, thank you. Thank you very much, Blaine. We'll talk to you again soon. See you out there.
All right. Thank you all. All right. Sounds great.
All right. Bye.
I want to go to the pony auction. That'd be fun.
I know. I was just thinking that. I'm like, I wonder if I could go get a good deal on a good pony. Because, you know, I always need a new lesson pony.
I went to, you know, me and ponies. I love ponies. So, yeah, I went to a pony auction. That'd be a bad thing. Jennifer never let me go by myself. Not with any money or credit cards or anything, anyway.
You can go to any auction you want as long as you have no ID with you. No driver's license, no credit card.
See what I'm telling you? I couldn't go. I just have to bring
Jamie's
checkbook.
And what's really bad, is you guys don't bring my husband because y'all would come home with four. My husband is the worst at rescuing a bunny, and everybody blames me, and everybody probably blames Jennifer for the horses, but it's y'all's fault.
Yeah, you know, I'm still stuck on the standard bred. I'm still leaning towards a rescue standard bred because I really like the idea of rescuing a horse, and I really want one that rides and drives. So, and I sort of picked out the carriage I'm going to beg Wendy for. When I was down there last week, I saw the carriage I want to finagle from her. So that's
talking
coming here one of these days soon.
Our sports, spending money at tack shops. My God, you need a horse, you need a harness, you need a carriage, you need all sorts of ridiculous stuff, plus all the stuff that goes along with a horse. Yeah, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Time for the song now. And after the song... I'm gonna have a rescue story that's a little bit different. We haven't had a good rescue story in a while. Well, I've never heard one like this before. So that's coming up right after we hear from Jeff Dawson and a little bit about ranching the modern way. It's called 90 Mile an Hour.
I got invited to a gathering here just the other day. The outfit boss seen me in town. This is what he had to say. Been a while since you helped us. Things have changed here just a bit. Then he kicked around with his old boot and leaned over and spit. He said, I don't know if you know this or not, but we don't use horses anymore. The new owner, he took over, and all that horse stuff went right out the door. Now don't you laugh, but we're all riding about a 200cc. Bright yellow rubber tired Kawasaki. But we still could use your help if your old horse don't mind the noise. Hate myself if you got bucked off amongst all our cowboy toys. I said we'll be there at 6, sonny, and don't you worry none. Ain't no way my old horse and I would be having this much fun. Now, the story, it gets good from here because you ain't seen so many wrecks. Why, it looked like opening day of the Kansas Speedway Motorplex. They was upside down and sideways. They was rolling over and breaking bones. I didn't know whether to keep gathering cattle or not. I want one on my phone. Cause it was 90 mile an hour over hill and under trees. My horse and I are dodging steers and Kawasaki's. 90 mile an hour and there's cussing galore. Ain't no way my horse and I won't be cussed anymore. Now, when the smoke all cleared, my horse and I pinned every last head. The new owner, he came over and he said, what I owe you? And this is what I said. While them four-wheelers is hunting places to cross and shifting gears with all their torque, my horse and I, we shut the gate on them all. We did about four times the work. So honestly, my pay should be about four times that of those other hands you hired. He looked at me and he wrote me out a check and he said, your horse or fire. Ain't that a heck of a note? Cause it was 90 mile an hour over killing under trees. My horse and I are dodging steers and Kawasaki's. 90 mile an hour and there's cussing galore. Ain't no way my horse and I up money in the sky. Ain't no way my horse and I will not fit anymore. I hate them cows. Kawasaki's.
Well, that's Jeff Dawson. You can find all of his music at ranchcowboy.com. That's called 90 Mile an Hour. I thought that was fun. Now, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings out there in Phoenix, Arizona. And this show is sponsored by Back on Track. Coach Jen is producing today. And I got to tell you, I got a rescue story. We love doing rescue stories here on the show. And Jamie, I've never had one like this before. And this is out of Santa Barbara, California. All right. Out on the West Coast. And now picture the scene. You're on the beach in Santa Barbara, and you're set up with a photographer doing a photo shoot of a rider on the beach. So we got the photo shoot, we got the model, we got the gray mare, and we're doing the photo shoot and everything. Well, something went wrong about 6:40 p.m. and the horse panicked, bucked the rider off. And what do horses usually do when they buck the rider off on the beach? What would you expect the horse to do?
Run away down the beach.
Would you expect the horse to go diving into the surf and swim 2 miles out into the ocean?
What? No way.
So that's what happened. The horse panicked and swam 2 to 2.5 miles out to sea.
Dang, that's a fit horse.
Talk about bizarre. That's bizarre behavior right there. I think that this horse needs a psychiatrist when they get back, or they were working it too hard, or he really didn't like that model, one or the other. The Harbor Patrol was sent out, and what happened was there was a big freight liner out there. It was starting to get a little dark, so there was a big freight liner out there that actually saw the horse, stopped, and used its big floodlights to help the Harbor Patrol find the horse. So the Harbor Patrol went out there, and they have these floaty devices, and they actually hooked the horse to the side of the boat, and then they guided the horse back into the shore where there was a veterinarian and everything, and they said other than being totally exhausted that the horse was fine. But I've never heard of that before.
You have got to be kidding me. So this horse, it bucks its rider off, and instead of going down the beach or running back to the barn, it ran out into the ocean. Now, let me just pick apart the horse's mentality. How bad does it have to be for a horse to want to commit suicide? I mean, that horse is suicidal, right? I mean, isn't that what that was? It just was like, I can't take it anymore. I'm just going to go drown to myself.
Or he just liked surfing the waves and went out a little too far. You know, people do that too.
That's true. Maybe it was a undercurrent. He was trying to ride a wave in, but then the undertow pulled him out. You never know. Yeah, you're right. Could have been.
There's a bizarre rescue story. I bet you even Dr. Jones has never heard of one like that. Well, we are next up for this.
It's time for the weekly health report from Horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And we have Michelle with us from thehorse.com with the weekly horse health report, and also Dr. Jones from Florida Equine. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, Dr. Jones, have you ever heard a horse intentionally swimming out to sea to get away from the people and then having to be rescued?
No, I have not. No, I've seen them get into muck pits and get stuck in lakes. But the ocean, no. That had to be a pretty extreme situation for that horse wanting to get away.
Yeah, I would think so, too. I think we're only hearing part of that story. I would like to hear the other part of that story.
Yeah,
I would too.
The horse's part of the story.
Exactly.
So my horse gets vertigo at the beach. Watching the waves and almost falls over. There's no way he's going to go near the water.
Vertigo. Now, would you video that for us? That would be fantastic, Michelle, if you video that.
It's fantastic and terrifying at the same time. It's really, really scary. But, yeah, there's something about watching the waves that just makes him start swaying.
Wow.
Well, before we get into our topic today, which is insect hypersensitivity, I have to talk to Dr. Jones here for a minute. Let's say that when you go to want to move to Florida, there's something that the moving board of the Florida Tourism Bureau doesn't tell you about.
There's a lot they don't tell you.
Exactly. Love bugs happen to be the one thing that they really don't tell you about. Oh, my God. I have never had to clean my windshield so many times in my entire life. Every time you go out, these things are like glue.
Yeah, I was going to say clean or scrape. It's more like scrape. It's like scraping ice off your windshield.
Yeah, people that don't know what they are, they're actually these bugs that are like mating while they're flying around. And they hit your windshield, and they are literally like glue. You don't use your windshield washer because that just makes smears them. And you'll literally hit yesterday I was driving down the highway, and I was getting like 10 a minute. You know, boom, 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 boom. It was incredible.
You'll hit a cluster of them, too, like on some of the back roads. All of a sudden you go through like a fog or a cloud of them, and it just pelts your whole windshield, and it's almost completely covered. But if you don't get it off your paint of the front of your vehicle, it will eat your paint.
Now, we were just told that yesterday. I was not aware of that. So today I have to get out and get them off because there's about 1,000 of them stuck there.
Oh, yeah. They have washing stations on the turnpike on the service centers where you get off. You can run your vehicle through a little wash thing that all it does is just rinse. It doesn't do any kind of full-blown scraping, scrubbing, rub the little rub things on your car. It just sprays the front end of your car.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Didn't know that either.
Yeah.
And I heard
so
that there's
that
so many of them. I heard that there's so many of them because they taste nasty and nothing eats them. So they have, like, no natural predators except your windshield.
Basically, yes. And they were brought in here for mosquitoes, and they didn't quite do that job. So.
Oh, so they were brought in? They weren't even natural?
No, they were imported bugs.
Oh, jeez. Once again, gone wrong.
Yep.
All right, Michelle, I'm done.
Yeah, so we do. We kind of trade. You trade for nice weather, you get bugs, right? I mean, that's.
Yeah.
You know, here right now it's beautiful out, and now all the bugs are coming out. So we're talking about insect hypersensitivity. This week, before we jump into it too far, we're tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern, thehorse.com is doing a live event on common skin conditions. So if anyone's out there and wants to listen in, we have some really great questions. Tons of questions came in on the topic of skin conditions. So you can sign up on thehorse.com. We have a little registration link under upcoming news and events. And if you're even more interested in nasty skin stuff, we have a slideshow on there. It's also under new resources of common skin, equine skin conditions. There's some nasty things there. So if you want to see a picture of skin of hypersensitivity, it's there. So to start us out,
if you don't mind, don't be offended if I avoid that.
You don't want to see the nasties?
No.
So let's start out. You, what are the clinical signs of insect hypersensitivity in your horse? Or you know, sometimes it's called sweet itch.
It can be called Queensland itch for those of the. English persuasion, too, is the other name that they have for it down in Australia. The common signs you'll see is scratching and hair loss and some sores. Primarily, it's really easy to diagnose majority of the time in Florida here. Clinical signs that I have on a handout that's on my website under client information sheets or client education forms. It says clinical signs, scratching their tail head, their mane about midway down, their face, their chest, their belly, their ventral belly, and or their ears. So what I'm trying to say is all those areas can be affected. One of those areas can be affected. A couple of them can be affected. But I walk up to a horse, it's missing its hair midway down. It's about halfway down the mane. It's missing the tops of the tail head. And people will think it's pinworms, so they'll deworm the heck out of those poor horses. And it ends up being these flies that land there, and they can't get their mouth on it, and they can't swish their tail to get rid of those flies in that area. So they bite, cause an allergic reaction from the saliva, and thus scratch. So they'll lose the mane or tail hair. They'll lose hair in the face, hair in the ventral abdomen, on the chest, in the ears. They'll go up to sticks in the trees and rub inside of their ears. And it's usually those horses that are on pasture 24/7, or they're turned out at night because they want to keep that beautiful black coat on their horse, and they don't want them out sun-baked and bleached during the day.
So they trade the horse's tail for their beautiful black coat.
That's their hopes. When they move to Florida, welcome Glenn and Jennifer, they do this because they want to keep that beautiful coat, and then next thing you know, they've got a bald horse, and they're just devastated.
It's so horrible. Are all horses sensitive to insects like this?
Nope. And you can have your horse here for 5-6 years. Do that same routine. I'm putting them out at night, going to keep this black coat, this beautiful bay color, whatever it is. And then next thing you know, all of a sudden they start. And then they think, oh, pinworms because they're scratching their rear. Oh, this. And so they treat with some over-the-counter product because they hear it helps in that area. And after about 2 or 3 months, they're not getting any ground, and they've completely lost the hair. They've got some secondary bacterial infections from scratching so much, they're sores, and it's inflamed and infected.
So what makes one horse more sensitive than the other? Why is one horse going to have an allergic reaction and another one's not?
Unfortunately, we don't know why. They say that it's just as they age, their immune system or their allergy system becomes less apparent or less able to fight off some allergy-type related issues. Like I said, you could have a horse here for 5 years, and all of a sudden you start seeing it. And that horse could be 12 years old or it could be 18 years old. Doesn't matter what age. But they do skin testing on these horses, and they may have a low reaction early on and then later have a bigger reaction to it. Just depends. And, again, it's not the first summer or first rainy season that you bring this animal here that you're going to see it right away. You could be here for a couple of years before you start seeing the problem.
Yeah. So what kind of bugs are causing these problems?
Well, they did a study. It was a great study they did back in Texas and Florida. It was written up in the AAP journal, and I don't remember the year. But they vacuumed, believe it or not, they vacuumed horses' bellies and tails and mane at the place they were getting bit and losing hair. And then they took a dissecting microscope, and they separated off the different types of flies they were finding. Primarily is a culicoides. It's what they call the noceums, the things you can't see, and you're walking in through your wet pasture, and you start scratching your hair because you feel like something's creepy crawling in it and biting it nonstop, but you can't find it, and it's not mosquitoes. It's more creepy crawly than mosquito bites. That's kind of your noceum.
You're making me itch right now. Oh, my God,
exactly.
I'm scratching my head.
Yeah, and some people think this is lice because it's kind of that same thing, something creepy crawly in their hair. They think, you know, it's lice, but it's the noceums or the culicoides. The other ones that they found are the black flies and the horn flies. And those are common types of stable flies that are in your barns, attracted, of course, to manure and attracted to the horses. So in the umbilical area, it's one particular fly. I believe it's the horn fly. And then a little bit further down the ventral abdomen, it's the black fly. So they have their areas they like to chew on. I guess you could put it that way.
So how do you protect your horses from these nasty little bugs?
It depends on what stage your horse is in. So if you have that nasty picture that the horse has, you're probably in a severe case, and you probably need to throw everything kitchen sink at them to make sure that they can get through it. The number one thing I tell people to do, stall the horse during the prime feeding times, which is nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, black flies and horn flies are out during the day, and they will feed, but they're not as aggressive as the nighttime noceums and the change of the hours, so going from light to dark and dark to light. So dusk and dawn times are high prime feeding times. Also, not just putting them in the stall, because most of our stalls here in Florida are made to have breezes go through. They're very open air because you don't want them too hot. You probably have to put a fan on them, too, because then the flies can't land and cause the problem. So it's all repelling, keeping them off, putting a fan on a horse so that the fly can't fly against that speed and land and start the bite, which starts the allergic reaction, which starts the scratching, which starts the hair loss, which starts the sores. You see how it's a cascading effect. Now, you can use fly spray if you have pastured horses and you don't have stalls to put them in. You could put fly spray on those horses, but I have yet to find a good fly spray that really works. They want you to use, they meaning dermatologists, want you to use a permethrin-based fly spray. That's P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N, a permethrin-based fly spray. the percentage that you look for on the fly spray bottle has got to be 2% or greater, not 0.2%. You'll have to look for that decimal point. So if you're older like I am, get your glasses out, check it, make sure it's 2% or greater. There's some out there that are 10% permethrin. You can dilute them a little bit, you know, a little longer. But those still don't cut down on the amount of biting if you've got a very severely affected horse at night. Now, against my will, but in a very severe situation on a pastured horse, you could use the fly sheets that are sold and from head to tail. And, of course, a fly mask with ears covering for those that have the ears that are getting affected would be recommended, but also a fly sheet from neck all the way to the tail and goes underneath the belly because, of course, they feed on the ventral abdomen on the belly side. And the only thing that concerns me about that is that you want a snug fit because I always worry about these horses get their legs caught in the wrappings of that fly sheet or somebody who doesn't check their horse often enough to make sure the fly sheet is still properly on them, and then they get hooked up in it and they hurt themselves. But
so
that would be an extreme in a pasture.
Let me ask you a question about that because I've seen the fly sheets and I've really considered using one. However, what is the what is the temperature difference? Because it doesn't matter whether you're putting it on your horse if it's super thin or whatever. It just seems to me like you're blanketing your horse.
It actually is not bad here in Florida. I have a black horse, Tennessee Walker, that was severely affected, pastured, did not have a stall to go in. They were desperate. They put the fly sheet on him. Now, granted, he's black. He's out all day and all night in that fly sheet, and he did not sweat heavily. He looks
okay.
Really good. So you'd be amazed at how much there is breathing in those fly sheets, but they're still a small enough mesh that the flies can't bite through it. Now, I'm sure mosquitoes could probably still get through it, but not the flies. And the mosquitoes are not what we're worried about. It's more the flies and the no-see-ums.
Okay.
So if your horse has a severe reaction, because I've had horses that I've managed where throw them out on the pasture, bring them in, and it's just, you know, they're covered in welts and hives and rubbing their tail and mane out. Is there anything that you as a veterinarian can do to help that horse out other than having the owner do management practices to protect them?
Yeah, the management I really wanted to talk about initially because that's the primary thing. If you don't stop them biting the horse, you're not stopping the whole process. So you have to stop the cause. And the cause is certain flies landing on the horse, biting, causing this allergic cascade. Secondarily, we can treat the affected area. So as a veterinarian, I see a severely affected horse, I'm going to have them bathe with medicated shampoos, not the over-the-counter. Now, usually they've already tried every over-the-counter you can possibly think of. A medicated shampoo, and there's a couple of them out there. They come and go off the market for whatever reason. It's mostly dogs and cats shampoos we have to use. They don't make medicated shampoos for horses. So they're sometimes a little pricey. But some of them have like a benzoyl peroxide in there, like you hear on the acne commercials that dry out the skin. They're going to dry out all those areas that are causing sores and get them to heal up a little bit faster. Then there's others that have aspirin in them that help calm down the cells of the skin because they're constantly making more cells, trying to replace the cells that are dying and being affected by the allergic reaction, and thus you get the thickening of the skin in those areas as well. And so you get one with an aspirin base to it that kind of calms the skin down. You use it a couple times a week. So bathing with a medicated shampoo two or three times a week, only in the affected area. The whole body doesn't have to be done. So you're not going through shampoos like mad and spending loads of money on it. And then an anti-itch cream or an anti-itch spray. Usually we have a dog-based cream or spray that we have to use off-label to horses because they don't make loads of those for horses. Those can be applied in the affected area. Of course, those are going to be from your veterinarian because they're prescription-based anti-itch products in there, ingredients. The fly spray to prevent any more landing or fly roll-ons maybe around the sores to prevent more flies landing on the area because you don't want summer sores. And then you can go as extreme as oral antibiotics if they're secondary bacterial infections, or you can go to steroids on severe cases to stop the itch completely, get the horse to calm down, the skin to calm down, and regrow the hair and regrow the skin in a better fashion. We're always using steroids in horses, with a bit of caution because of some of the side effects that steroids can have in horses. So definitely have your veterinarian look at the horse, determine if it's going to be a candidate for any one of those items I talked about, especially the steroids, and definitely use them as prescribed.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Jones. It's bug
season.
It is bug
season.
Yeah,
and with the rain we've had this week here in Florida, thank God for the rain, we will have more bugs emerging out, so you'll start seeing these fly bite allergies, and they're very characteristic in where they land and where you get the hair loss and where you get the scratching. I do have a funny story, if you have a minute for that.
Sure.
Yeah, and then I have a question. I have a question after that real quick.
Okay. I saw a horse, and this is 20 years experience working for it. I had a horse that the lady called in and said, I think he was 11, 12-year-old, is having a hard time getting up in the pasture. And she tacked it on to like two or three other things we were doing at that barn. And as I was leaving, I told my receptionist for the day, I said, I don't know if we're going to be able to see that horse. That's a lameness exam. We already got a lot to do at the farm. It's going to put us late to the next appointment, but I'll talk to her about it, and we'll see where we go. So out there, she said, oh, did you hear? I've got, you know, a problem. I said, yes. I said, it was added on last. If we can get to it, great. If not, to reschedule, because this might be a full-out lameness exam if your horse is having some arthritic condition. I'm thinking that's odd for an 11, 12-year-old, but, you know, it's possible, getting up on the pasture. Well, she proceeds to continue to tell me about him getting up in the pasture, which is fine. And she says he puts his front legs out in front of him, and he's, like, rocking forward to try to get up on his front legs. And he's rocking, and he's rocking. And they'll call to him and look over at them in the pasture, and he'll rock, and he'll rock, and he'll try to get up. And then he'll finally get up. And she says, and then some other days he just gets up. And I said, I think we can look at your horse. So yeah. We go through the appointment, and at the end we see this horse last. She pulls the horse up, and I proceed to go to the car or the truck. I get out a glove. I go around to the side of the horse, right around where the girth goes on his left side. I put my hand underneath. I find a nice little scab. I start to scratch it, and he curls his lips, rolls his eyes back in his head, cocks his head to the side, and he's in heaven. He's like, oh, you found the itch spot. You found the itch spot. And she's laughing, and she said, and she's proceeding to tell me again how he can't get up. And my vet assistant is cleaning up buckets, and she's watching the whole scenario, and she mouths to me, he's scratching, isn't he? And so I stopped. I looked at the client, and I said, Miss Kim, we'll diagnose your horse. And we'll go on from there. And Kim looked at her and said, what he's doing is he's scratching his belly as he's rocking back and forth, and then he gets up.
Mm-hmm.
The client felt horrible. She's like, oh, I'm so stupid. I said, no. I would have thought the same thing. You're looking at them. It looks like they're trying to get up. All they're doing is scratching their belly.
Yeah.
And here's your bill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Check, please. Wow. That's one of those things is as the owner of the horse, you're like, oh, my God, I'm an idiot. What is wrong with me?
That's what she said. I mean, she's owned horses most of her life. That's what she said. I said, don't worry about it. This is something new. You never experienced it in another horse. So, hey, you learned something today.
And I'd rather have an itchy horse than a lame horse any day. So.
Exactly. That was the key, is it wasn't as bad as she thought it was going to be.
Absolutely. So, well, my question, Dr. Jones, is, you know, treating these horses, my thoroughbred has a bit of an itchy problem right now, and so we've been considering getting the fly sheets and all that kind of stuff. Now, you mentioned this, it is not just in the rainy climates that you have these little no-see-ums that really bother the horses. I mean, we have them seriously in the desert here, even in the dry climate, and it's probably exacerbated because I live on property that gets irrigated. So we do have the mosquitoes as well. Now, treating a horse with the steroids, and that is what I did last summer when he started about this time of year to get affected by it, but he wasn't competing. So competing this year, I'm scared to pop him with a shot of steroid just because I don't know if it's going to be testable, how long that lasts. Do you have any input on that?
Yes, yes. And that's, you know, really a big concern because these horses can't have, and especially, let's say, a halter horse, can't have one hair out of place or one broken hair. So, yes, there are certain steroids that you can use at a show, USEF, United States Equestrian Federation, and it is legal as long as you use it at that dose for those short amount of days. At an FEI event, no go. You'll have to find some other way or means to get this horse to keep its itch under control. Usually you're not doing halter in an FEI event, so the loss of hair is not huge as long as they're not bald. But you said shot, and that did bring up a concern. There is an old remedy for this, and that's a Vetilog shot. And I'll get asked numerous times, can you give a Vetilog shot to my horse? I'm a little hesitant to do that because we don't know how long that triamcinolone will be in their body. We don't know if your horse is insulin resistant and may become more acutely affected by that triamcinolone, which is the ingredient in Vetilog effect, and may founder your horse. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is I saw a nice little Western Pleasure halter horse, and it had a few broken hair on its tail. And they vaccinated the horse and had a Vetilog shot done by another veterinarian. 2 weeks later, they asked me to come look at this horse because it was lame, and it had foundered. And I tried to stop the founder, and usually injectable steroid founders are very difficult to treat. And it continued to rotate and rotate until it was coming through the bottom. And I had to have a 17-year-old girl walk through my clinic crying to say goodbye to her horse. Was very devastating to me. Very sad. I don't like to end on a sad note, but I am hesitant about using the Vetilog injections as opposed to dexamethasone injection. That clears the system a little faster.
And that's kind of what I know there was some Vetilog, I think it was like a Depo/Vetilog shot that he got last year. And to me, it concerned me. I mean, he's a skinny thoroughbred, so I didn't think that insulin resistance was going to be a potential problem with him. But I just want to make sure that I'm not giving him something that's 3 months down the road. We're at a horse trial and he gets tested. He's like, oh, you gave him steroids. So there is something that is a little quicker acting and that leaves quicker that is legal. What is the name of that? Just so I can write it down.
Dexamethasone. And it's the first one I grab. I rarely do the Depo Vetilog only because of that case, that one case. And I know that sounds silly, but to watch a 17-year-old girl walk down your aisleway crying her eyes out, saying goodbye to a horse that looked perfectly normal except for the bones coming through its feet. Very, very devastating to me. Yeah. So I tried to talk people out of it, but there are some that are still insistent on it. But the dexamethasone is my first go-to. It's very short-acting, so you won't be able to give the injection and walk away for 3 months and say, hey, everything's good, or 3 weeks, or however long some of those Vetilog shots work. But it's legal to show on as long as you don't do it more than 5 days in a row and as long as you don't go over 10 milligrams. So there is the rules, spell it out, and you can look it up in USCF rules, and that's where I tell you to go to, and also ask your veterinarian.
Okay.
So I have a question along those lines. So are there any other side effects? Like I have a corgi who has really horrible allergies, and she's on a steroid, and it makes her super anxious. Uh-huh. Is that something that we see in the horses as well with that?
I don't see the anxious as much as I see unthrifty weight loss. We're treating one right now who has ulcers, who was on dexamethasone for 30 days for its allergy-related condition by another veterinarian. I came on the case, and it has a body condition score of a 1.5. I asked the young lady yesterday, I said, tell me the body condition score of your horse. Since you're taking equine science classes, you tell me what you've learned. And she said a 1.5. I said, yes, you are correct. So I was not offending her. She knew her horse was in bad shape. Didn't want to finish its grain. So it has all the clinical signs of gastric ulcers. Scoped it. It has gastric ulcers, severe ones. And this was 30 days worth of dexamethasone every day orally.
So basically it has a lot of potential effects. Is my horse is just going to have to itch. I'm
under a fan.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give him a fan and he can just stand underneath it and itch.
I'm telling you, I had a mare that had this problem. And I was too busy as a veterinarian to do all the treatments, the bathing, the creams, the sprays, the fly spray, all that. I'd just bring her in at night, put her under a fan. Her hair came back. She still did scratch, but she grew her mane back. She grew her tail head back. She grew the hair back on her chest, which was completely bald when I got her because she was a broodmare out in a pasture 24/7. So it does work by just doing the stall and the fan a lot of times.
Okay. Well, I'll start with that then. Well, you guys, unfortunately, we're out of time. as it is, it's always so interesting to talk to both of you. So check out thehorse.com. Dr. Jones is at floridaequine.com. And you guys, thank you so much for being on the show and talking about this.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Talk to you next time.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye, Jones.
Dr. Jones, can you hold on 1 second? I think Jennifer needs to talk to you, so she'll pick up. I'm just going to put you on hold.
Thank you, yes.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Michelle.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, so we are running out of time today. That's it. That's all we have time for. So we'll be back again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern here on Horses in the Morning. That was a very interesting conversation. It's so much fun to have them on because I just learn something every week about stuff that you think you know everything about, like you there. You probably thought, well, I know about this stuff, but then you learn something.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, and this has just been a question that I've had for a while now because in the past, like, week, he started itching. So it was the perfect time, and that's why we love to have them on because they're so topical and seasonal with their subjects. So very helpful. Well, tomorrow we will talk to you about the woman that has gone to jail because of stealing money for her daughter's riding lessons. I cannot wait to tell you that story.
Wow, so I can't wait to hear that story.
Yeah,
all right,
tune
everybody.
In tomorrow morning.
Thanks, everyone. You have a great day, and remember to wear your helmets when you're riding today.
Spay, neuter, and geld. And we made it the whole show without you playing the Preakness song.
Oh, darn.